This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, Episode 6 for Thursday, May 7th, 2009, Rally Cap Roundtable. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Music Store.
So welcome to another edition of Out of Line After Hours. And joining us, we got a regular crew and a live guest who we'll get to in a minute. But Peter, tell me a little bit about your column this week. You talking about Roger Penske and Saturn, some interesting stuff going on there.
Well, subsequently, we found that every car company in the free world is now interested in Saturn, but the idea that Penske might be interested is very intriguing because, obviously, with his Penske Automotive and the very fine roster of Saturn dealers, you could see Penske putting together a program that might work for them. So I thought it was very interesting. Of course, I had a controversial thing at the end of the column that people are still talking about.
But and that's about Penske ought to buy the Corvette?
Yeah, Penske ought to buy the Corvette, lock, stock, and barrel, the plant, the Hall of Fame, everything.
Engineers,
the best and the brightest, and get it out of GM before the government and the union input to the corporation runs it in the ground. And, of course, that's not going to happen. I've been told a million times. And then he saw on Auto Week, they did an interview with Fritz, and he said, "Oh, well, Corvette's, you know, solid." But he couldn't say when the C7 was coming, you know. And I put something on the table column on my site to follow up on their interview. So it's been lively this week.
We got to get back into the Saturn and Penske stuff in the show. But Jason Vine's also here with us. And Jason, I know one of the topics you want to get into today has got to do with what, retirees at Chrysler?
Salaried retirees from Chrysler, non-union, maybe getting the shaft, and my opinion, unfairly so, not even being considered in this bankruptcy. So we'll see where that goes. And late breaking news, Marchionne from Fiat has put an offer in to buy Walmart.
No.
So Saab, Opel, Chrysler, and Walmart.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting week.
Yeah, well, I don't buy the Walmart part, but we got to get into some of the other things that they're doing there. And joining us, too, is Mark Phelan from the Detroit Free Press. Mark, great having you here.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure.
And then one of the latest things I know you just wrote about was the Audi TTS, which I just had a chance to test drive, too.
Isn't that a blast? It is. You were talking about the Corvette and all the uncertainty that people have about that. The TTS is the template for how you make a great fuel-efficient sports car that'll still be relevant in the future. Little old 2-liter engine, 260 horsepower, 250 pound-feet of torque. It's a riot, and it gets great fuel economy.
And the car is beautiful, I think. I mean, I always liked the first TT that came out, but it was more like a designer statement. The current one is just beautiful, I think.
And so much more room inside, which was one of the real drawbacks on the first one. This is a car you could use comfortably every day.
Yeah. Well, I want to get back to this Nissan Penske thing, or I meant Saturn and Penske, but yeah. Now there's talk out there that Nissan's interested in this, too. Have you heard this?
Yeah, and that Nissan might want to team up with Penske or, you know, the Saturn dealers and, you know, what we're seeing now is this global crash of all, the whole industry is consolidating at such a rapid rate. And Marchionne has this vision, but if you go back to really look at Fiat, they're not doing so well, and they don't have the money to pull all this off. So he's kind of like hoping that, well, I want to buy Opel, but I want to use the German government money to do it. But he's got this vision, and he's hoping everyone buys into it, and then he's going to emerge as, you know, one of the leaders of the industry at the end. And more power to him, but boy, he's playing some high-stakes poker without his own money at this point.
Talking about Saturn and maybe Renault-Nissan is in the picture now as well. Why on earth would Renault-Nissan want the Saturn dealers? I mean, it is a wonderful dealership network. They're great people, but Nissan is not 400 dealers short of, you know, what they need in America. They're in all the same markets Saturn's in. Renault doesn't want to launch its own brand here and you know, call them Saturn, or at least if they have it, it's the first I've heard about it. I mean, that strikes me as one of those, you know, things that it gets tossed out there, and there must be something, you know, some kind of background chatter. But I don't understand, you know, the logic that, you know, you make that connection work with.
This is like growing up in my little town in Iowa. Every Saturday before Easter, we had the Easter egg hunt in the town square, and they put all these Easter eggs out. These were the crappy little candy ones, and all the kids would run, and you just grab whatever you can. You're not sure if it's any good. What all of these automakers are going to survive, they're worried that they don't grab the one that's the jewel. It's like a girl somebody nobody cared about, and suddenly somebody asks her out, and all the other guys go, well, maybe there's something there. And that nobody wants to look stupid now, but this is a free fall.
And a lot of what they're doing, you know, frankly, is trash picking through stuff that GM has thrown away because they couldn't make money with it. I mean, how is it suddenly Marchionne, who's a smart guy and put together what looks like a brilliant deal with Chrysler, is saying, oh, Saab is such a wonderful brand, and, you know, we're interested in that. Saab has not been a wonderful brand. Saab has not made money consistently at any time in its 60-year history. So, I mean, what is it that suddenly there's no money, but everybody seems to be spending like drunken sailors, or at least talking about it?
Yeah, and is it Geely now the lead party interested in Volvo and Saab? So, this consolidation is going. I mean, we could write 24 hours a day and we wouldn't keep up with it.
See, I can see Penske's logic. You know, hey, I'll grab this brand for next to nothing. It's a great dealer body. I'll go shop it to the Chinese or whoever. I don't get Nissan's interest. I mean, everybody has talked in the last two decades of how the good model for a car company is to have two brands, mass market brand, upscale or luxury brand. And so Nissan's got that. They got Nissan, they got Infiniti. Where Saturn fits in boggles my mind. The only logic I can see at all is they're in Smyrna, Tennessee. That's where their, you know, manufacturing headquarters are. And Saturn in Spring Hill, Tennessee is not that far away. Do they need another plant? No. Maybe you'd buy that. I mean, why would you get Nissan?
Well,
or why would you get Saturn?
Well, and it's not like Nissan is overburdened with great cars that they don't have any place to sell. I mean, Nissan's got a nice lineup, but they are not printing money exactly right now. They're asking, you know, the Japanese government for really substantial amounts of loans and loan guarantees to help them cover commercial paper and you know, line up financing. And you're right. I mean, what do they need with Saturn, and do they need another factory?
Saturn are the premium dealers. Those are the cream of the crop of the GM dealers, right? So, and it's so important in this business to have really good dealers and a small number. Nissan dealers were never the cream of the crop. They were last in. When Mr. K came in, he started with used car dealerships to start the Nissan business. So they've evolved over time, but still some of them are kind of the dregs. So if he could somehow get this great dealer body that has a well-worn reputation customers want to come to, and he could somehow put those together, that's part of it.
Carlos is always thinking of something. You know, he's been too quiet. You know, it's just I'm sure it fries him that Marchionne is getting a lot of attention, so he's probably cooking up something. But what about the global overcapacity that they keep talking about of this industry? I mean, it's something like 50% overcapacity, or some incredible amount of factories that, you know, they can build way too many products. So I don't know where this is all going.
Well, you know, and getting back to Marchionne and Opel, I don't see how they could pull it off, because Fiat has a very flat management structure right now. They just completed it in January of this year. Marchionne went to every, you know, the guys who run Lancia and Alfa Romeo and Fiat, and gave them additional jobs on top of that. So, I mean, these guys are up to here with work already. They don't have time to go do this merger with Chrysler.
much less do Chrysler and Opel. And that's my big puzzle about this whole thing. I like Jason's analogy of it's the Easter egg hunt, and you're grabbing whatever you can find. You don't care if it's good or not because, you know, you're a kid that's just trying to get as much candy as you can.
Plus, he's saying flat out to the German government, I'll do it with your money. Mm-hmm. And then he has the German trade unions to deal with. So,
And they don't want an election coming up this year.
Yeah.
And no politician is going to sign off on a deal that's going to close down any plants. And he says that, you know, we can do this without closing any, you know, plants, you know, in Germany. But, I mean, the beauty, potential beauty of Chrysler and Fiat is there's no overlap. They don't make the same kind of cars. They don't sell them in the same places. Opel and Fiat is 80, 90% overlap. I mean, there's no way that I can see that you put those two together and you don't have to cut a lot of stuff. And the latest reports coming out of Germany are that there are suggestions that, you know, as many as 9 plants could go if he puts it together. And if there's any truth to that, you know, that idea is scuttled before it ever leaves the dock.
Well, you know, one of the guys at IG Metall, you know, the German union, sort of the UAW of Germany, has come out and flat out say, we don't want anything to do with Fiat. So they got a big fight on their hands in that regard. But what about Chrysler and Fiat? Who's going to really run Chrysler?
Well, reports out of Europe today, followed in the U.S., is that Marchionne is going to be the CEO.
Okay, so he's the CEO, but he's running Fiat, he's running Chrysler, maybe he's running Opel. I mean, if you're CEO, you got to be where the operations are. This guy's going to be jetting all over the place constantly. I mean, Ghosn is even being criticized now as people saying, you can't run Nissan and Renault. It's too much. So who's really going to be running Chrysler when Marchionne's not around?
Lee Iacocca.
From Bel Air, California.
But that is the million-dollar question at this point. Tom Lasorda has exited stage left. Who is going to be the chief operating officer? Who's going to be the guy on the ground?
Is Press going to stay?
That's no comment on it right now from anywhere.
And he's the only one that they haven't said anything about among the top level.
That's right. He was a little bit out of the loop on a lot of this. So I think it would be good for him if he did stay. He still has a decent relationship with the dealers.
Dealers like him, yeah.
Yeah, he did beg them to take cars, you know, a month and a half ago to help him get, or 2 months ago to get through March 31st, and the dealers believed him and bought a lot of cars, and then they're kind of stuck. But, you know, when he came on board in September of 07, that was viewed as a second coming, and he hasn't really been allowed to do what he can do best. And if he's the last guy standing and can do what he likes to do, he respects the dealer body, you know, when they come out of this, it could be okay.
I mean, he's got the credentials, I would think, to run the company.
Yeah, he does. You know, we go back to that Easter egg hunt and whatever about why you want to buy this stuff. When this all settles down, whoever's standing, I firmly believe the global market, once the economies recover, those that are left standing can make a lot of money. This is the Forrest Gump theory, you know. Forrest and Lieutenant Dan stayed outside in their boat and weathered the storm, and all the other shrimp boats crashed on the shore in Alabama. And when it was done, they were the lone boat, and all the shrimp came to them.
Mm-hmm.
Who's ever standing could make a lot of money because pent-up demand is huge.
Plus, everybody is lowering their costs drastically. I mean, Chrysler, with as few plants as they're going to end up having, they should be, you know, running at a, you know, real high utilization rate. There's no reason that Chrysler can't make a lot of money if it's got good products and a few plants that are working hard. And Press, if he does end up being the, you know, top guy on site in Auburn Hills, one of the things that he was traditionally praised for at Toyota is knowing the difference between a vehicle that's close and a vehicle that's nailed it. And that difference is going to be vital over the next 18, 20 months for Chrysler, because Fiat's got good platforms, they've got good engines, they've got good transmissions. They don't understand the interior and the features that Americans are going to want, and they're going to need somebody, you know, to hold their feet to the fire and say, we can't just slap a Chrysler badge on a Lancia or on a Fiat. It's got to be unique. And you know, press has got credibility if he's going to be the one making that argument.
Yeah, but what's Chrysler going to do for the next 24 months waiting for Fiat?
Lose money.
Well, they announced it today, $6,000 of incentives per vehicle.
Through May.
Through May until sales don't work in May, and then it'll go into June.
But they're looking at their watches. They're waiting 2 years for these new products, and man, I don't know.
The dealers get a little bit of a treat next year because a few European-built Fiats will come over, and that'll generate some excitement for whichever are the lucky Chrysler dealerships that get to sell the Fiat 500. So, you know, there's a little bit of a carrot on the stick to keep them from, you know, rebelling completely. But you're right. I mean, there's nothing between now and first quarter of 2011 that's going to make them much money. They just got to hang on.
Wow, that's a tall order.
That's a long time to go.
So what about my other suggestion or prediction that GM's going to move their headquarters to Shanghai?
Sales double.
Real estate's cheaper in Detroit.
Well, you know, there is going to be a new GM. You know, we talked last week, you know, what should the new name of the company be?
Yeah, and the thing that's coming through now is they're making money hand over fist, and Toyota has missed the market in China. They've been caught short. They don't have small cars. Their sales were down 17% in a momentum market. I mean, wow.
I missed that. I didn't see that.
That was late-breaking news.
God.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, whoa.
Because GM's saying, what, 50% up this year in China?
Yep.
But that's a huge increase.
But, boy, Toyota's really, that's beyond stubbing your toe. That's like walking into the side of a barn with your forehead.
What we've been talking about, we're all amazed at how Toyota has stumbled, not just in China, here badly, Japan badly. I mean, it's amazing. You know, the way I say it is, yeah, we know GM's losing money. They've been working on it for 30 years.
Yeah.
But Toyota went from the most profitable a year ago to losing big money right now.
Huge money.
In fact, Ford has more cash than Toyota. It's astonishing.
Seriously?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
More operating cash than Toyota
Did
has.
Did Toyota leave a few billion in the suit when they sent it to the
Toyota's cleaners? Got a very strong balance sheet. So that's its advantage over Ford. But when you look at it, they have, like, all this receivables that are owed to them, like $17 billion the last I looked. And you'd go, well, strong balance sheet. But I go, yeah, go collect those receivables. See who's paying. The money's not there.
Toyota faces huge challenges over the next few years, and they know it. And the top executives in Japan have been nervous about this for the last couple of years, and they're no less nervous now because they don't really know how to deal with it. I mean, they've gone from being the little guy that was the hungry one that was on the way up to now they're everybody's target. And I mean, if you look at what they've done in the United States, bringing out of retirement an executive to come over and head a whole new organization that's going to combine all the little fiefdoms that used to be Toyota USA. I mean, that is probably what Jim Press wanted them to do when he left and went to Chrysler. But, I mean, Toyota's got a lot of balls in the air, and they can't afford to drop any of them right now.
Well, they're dropping them left, right, and backwards, and they're in a new situation for them. And I don't think they know how to react to it. They've always striven in their history for slow, steady growth. And then earlier in this decade, I think they got greedy. They said, you know what? We can knock GM off, man. We can be the biggest there is. Pedal to the metal, boys. Let's go.
Build more plants
everywhere. Get into product lines we've never been in before. And now it's come back to bite them. And I don't think they know how to react. Not yet.
That slow, steady growth, you're right. When I was at Nissan in 98, 99, the fear was that Toyota would just juice incentives enough. Nissan was so close to out of business that if Toyota wanted to do it, they could take out their major Japanese competitor in the U.S. and kill them because Nissan was basically bankrupt. But they didn't because it's a slow, steady approach and a little bit of nationalism, too. But, yeah, they got greedy.
That's how I read it.
The last 5 years, and it's bit them. We'll go back to that old line. Had we known this back in November when the big three were getting the crap kicked out of them in Washington— and to see the mistakes that were made, maybe we'd be in a slightly different situation with the view of the big three right now.
Hey, speaking of brands getting killed, we talked a little bit last week about Pontiac getting killed. Here's my question, though. My read of it is GM management did not want to kill Pontiac.
and it was the task force who kind of pushed it on. Not kind of, pushed it on them. Said, no, kill that brand. So they went, okay, we're killing Pontiac. But I'm thinking management really doesn't want to kill Pontiac because it's going to be this little niche performance brand that's going to get products largely out of Holden, which is all plus business for Holden. So you're hurting Holden by not doing this. And I'm thinking they are putting this, they've already said they don't want to sell the Pontiac brand. I'm asking, because I'm thinking, you pay off the government money, you bring Pontiac back.
Yeah, that's not out of the question. In the meantime, they're going to use the G8 platform, the architecture underneath, and do a rear-wheel drive Impala.
Are they going to do that? Because
that's rumored to be back on the burner. And off that, they're going to do a police car competitor to the Magnum and the Charger.
You see that G8 on the road. It is a sweet car, especially
I think it looks good.
Incredible value.
Oh, you buy one now, I mean, it's a huge value. Yeah. With
it's
a
like, what,
discount.
$7?
$8.50.
Which brings us to Pontiac dealers, a dealer group announced today. They're going to fight GM tooth and nail to keep the brand alive.
These are the solo Pontiac dealers. Solo Pontiac.
But there's only like 24 of them, is what I read.
In the old days, they could have stopped it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the power of the dealer franchise laws. Now, this is, but Peter and I were talking before the show, this is exactly why GM has to go into bankruptcy.
Right, to kill this off.
To kill this stuff that could cost them, 24 dealers could cost them $100 million in a ridiculous world, considering what it costs to shut down those solo Olds dealers. But they have to go into bankruptcy to allow this.
Up the franchise agreement.
Yeah, they just because it elongate the process. It'll cost them billions of dollars, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, and it gives them black eye.
But I hope you heard it here first that Pontiac. It's like that movie, The Princess Bride. If you ever saw that, you know,
20 times.
Yeah, when they have the prince and they go. Well, he's mostly dead, but he's not completely dead. And I think that's where Pontiac is. It's mostly dead, but not completely
inconceivable.
Dead.
Inconceivable!
Yeah.
The other thing, though, I frankly thought that GM was, you know, GM executives were as much behind the, you know, dropping the brand. I figured that it was a way to get a lot of headlines to look like we're giving up something that, to the casual observer, it'll seem like it's a big deal, but it's not. I mean, the expense of building Pontiac is buying the badges to put on a Holden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how much do they really save? And I got to think the task force people are smart enough to see the numbers adding.
I don't know. The task force wanted GMC killed, too.
But as soon as they saw the ledger, they changed their mind.
No, they kept pushing.
I heard that back early in the year, they asked about Buick and GMC.
Right.
And Fritz took out the ledger and he said, here's how many they sell, here's the profit per vehicle.
Right.
And that was the last time that Pontiac came up again.
I envision Fritz carrying this big leather binder ledger and open it up. See? Right here. We're making serious money here. Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, but I think that they got under pressure again to kill GMC and Pontiac, and then finally the GM guys caught on. Oh, yeah, we got to kill something else. Okay, kill Pontiac, but...
It might be back in an ideal world.
In an ideal world, right. But, you know, that's what I see coming, too, is that, you know, as we were just talking about, they've taken out so much capacity, all three of them have right now, that when the market comes back, and the market will come back, we might be 3 years away from it, but it'll start to come back then. When it does, the pent-up demand is going to be such that they're going to be straining to meet demand. And when you're straining to meet demand, you don't need incentives.
Yep.
Now you charge full sticker, maybe even above sticker. And they're going to make a ton of money. Yeah. I think all-time record profit.
Yeah, I agree. And straining to meet demand is always better than, you know, having short shifts and closing in alternate weeks, you know, or empty idle factories, you know.
Mm-hmm. And the real tragedy of the economic crisis is that even without all of the radical cost cutting that, you know, they've done this year, GM was in a position to make some pretty good money next year. And they just got the legs kicked out from under them a little too soon because, I mean, the retirees moving the health care costs off of their ledger and the fact that, you know, they'd be hiring people that were making $14 an hour, I mean, all of that That kind of thing is part of the reason that I think GM deserves all of the assistance they can get.
Yeah, I don't think they're there yet, though.
Collateral damage.
Today, they announced their first quarter earnings.
Oh, yeah, but that's why I'm saying collateral damage. I mean, in a perfect world, they would have struggled this year, and they would have lost some money, but they wouldn't have gone out of business. But when the whole market, you know, goes to hell in a handbasket, they're hemorrhaging, and they do need help.
It's what Peter said a couple weeks ago. Chrysler and GM bankruptcy, and it's just killed them. It killed Chrysler last month, the last two days.
Did it.
It's killing GM, even though they had the best, worst month.
Wait a minute. Their sales went up last month versus March.
There's been a constant.
You sound like a PR guy for an auto company.
Jeez. Well, and to get back to what we were talking about a second ago, Toyota's sales went down more than GM or Ford.
But what I'm saying is, if you look month over month, because I say, don't compare it to a year ago. You may as well compare it to the medieval ages. I mean, a year ago is a different world. But if I've been watching sales month over month, and GM sales were up 6%, 6.6% month over month. The only other major automaker who saw its sales go up was Honda. They were up 10%. Everybody else was down. Ford was only down about 1.5%. But you know, now I'm thinking that stupid rally cap campaign, which I can't stand, must have worked. Because how else do you explain why GM sales would have gone up? Peter, you're the marketing expert, the advertising expert. What do you make of this rally cap
campaign? I hated those commercials, but obviously there was enough dealer incentive money going on that people went to the showrooms.
But everybody's got incentive money. I mean, I got to believe it's this rally cap.
No, it can't be. You're killing me here.
I got to tell you, I thought they were hokey, but then I thought, I've been a coach in Little League and girls softball, and they still do the rally cap. If you go to a major league ballpark, they still do that. It's uniquely American. If they do that in Europe, it's because the people are stupid. But here, it's a real thing. And I think it actually, I don't know, hopefully there's some research on this. People go, you know, I understand that. And maybe it worked. Give them a little bit of credit.
I cannot explain any other reason why their sales went up. None whatsoever, except for the rally cap campaign.
Well, at least it's not an apology. We blasted the apology crap.
Right.
This was a, hey, we got to stick together and we got
some great
vehicles.
I don't know. To me, it was like selling pity. To me, it came across as, oh, help us, turn your cap out, come buy a car. And I hate it. I can't stand the ads.
This is why I just don't like you.
No, there's a bunch of other reasons, too.
But there's no doubt that 6 months in the media, constantly the din, Chrysler and GM, two things, bankrupt and bad, all the time. And I wrote about, and you know, readers blast me. So, well, you're saying it's the last 6 months, you know, put these companies in the shit. No, I didn't. I just said in the last 6 months, the constant media din has really hurt these companies. No, they did it themselves, believe me. But the last 6 months, the constant media din. Every time the GM bug appears over Brian Williams' shoulder on NBC News, it's bad news. Not positive, all bad.
You're right. And for Chrysler, they have, according to the task force, they have no new products. They have no good products. I sit there in traffic and I see a Wrangler four-door and I go, damn it, I wish I was get back in one of those suckers. It's a good vehicle. I see people very happy in a Jeep Cherokee, Grand Cherokee. There's some good stuff. Yeah, there's some crap.
The problem isn't that there's not good stuff. It's that you reach back to the Wrangler for the last good vehicle that they introduced, and it's a relatively low-volume product they introduced 3 years ago.
Yeah, but it's still doing well.
The stuff they're good at, they are great at.
You're right.
It's just too much stuff they're bad at.
But it's viewed as everything they have is bad. Which isn't true.
But it's a momentum business. I mean, they had all the momentum imaginable when the 300 was launched. I mean, they could have conquered the world if the next four or five vehicles, each in its own way, was as good as the 300.
Here you go.
Well, they need a new 300 last year.
Yeah.
And
but one great car isn't enough for anybody. You've got to have two or three strong players, and they followed the 300 up with a terrific minivan, a terrific Wrangler, and a Caliber, a Patriot, a Sebring, an Avenger. I mean, a bunch of stuff that was dead on arrival.
Yeah. The other thing I wonder, too, is, you know, both Ford and GM came out with assurance programs, meaning that if you lose your job, you know, they'll pay for it. So I was wondering if that's what drove the GM sales. But Ford has even a more lucrative assurance program than GM. And Ford sales were down. Not much, you know, and I think it was the assurance program that made it not drop that much. And again, I'm talking month over month. But GM had the assurance program. I still think it was that stupid rally cap.
I don't believe those assurance programs helped whatsoever. If you think you're going to lose your job soon, like within the next few days or weeks, I think the last thing you're going to do is buy a car. No matter, you know, you figure there's so many strings attached. Your wife's, honey, I'm going to lose my job, but they've got this great program. You're going to lose your job, you idiot. We're not going to buy a new car. We have a car.
But
we'll make
it
last.
It's not for those kinds of people. It's for the kind of people who go, you know, I'd really like to buy a car. I really should buy a car. I need a car. But what if I lost my job? What would I do then? It's for those people, not the guy who's going, oh, my God, what am I going to do next Tuesday? Yeah. Oh, I'll feel better. I'll go buy a car on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's the people who are really knowingly going to lose their job. They're just sort of like, I don't know if I should buy right
it's
now.
It's the people that if you can take out a kind of a low-level stress, then they go ahead and buy. And I think you're right. And I got a question because I will freely admit that I'm the worst judge of advertising that you will ever have on this program. So I know nothing about whether the rally cap worked or not. But I've been trying to figure out why GM had a month-to-month gain as well. And the one thing that I kept wondering about was, were people paying attention when in the GM and Chrysler speech, President Obama went into his little 3-minute infomercial with Chevy Malibu Car of the Year and all the other stuff they've done right? I mean, does that kind of thing have any effect?
Well, it might have for GM, but it sure didn't for Chrysler because their April sucked bad.
That was because of real bankruptcy.
Yeah. Hmm. And the president didn't have anything good to say about Chrysler.
Yeah, but I mean, Chrysler only sold 76,000 vehicles last month. That is really bad.
I've got my rally cap on. I've joked before that Barack and Michelle need to do an hour-long infomercial for the American car industry.
Why is that a joke?
It's not. It shouldn't be a joke. Because I actually believe, the best thing the president could do is it'd be nice seeing, them at a test track driving cars, talking about them, something for the industry, besides just handing money over, maybe, creating a little bit of a buzz.
They showed it up at a homeless food bank, Michelle did, and the great photo was she's sitting there serving food and the guy's taking a picture of her with his cell phone, and you're thinking, how do you have a cell phone if you're homeless? But they need to do that. They need to get out there and be cheerleaders for, and even if the cars that they're cheering for are made in Canada, but they're for an American car.
Or Mexico.
Let's get over that crap. You're starting to hear that. Well, they're going to give us all this money, and they're going to build all the cars in Mexico or Canada. They're still being engineered here. They're still supporting jobs here in America.
Well, be careful, though, because, there's a study that just came out yesterday that I was involved with called the Vertari study, and one of the things that we're pointing out is we've lost all small car development in this country. We put up a picture of the Ford Focus, U.S. version, the Dodge Caliber, and the Chevy Cobalt. And you know what those three cars have in common? They are the last small cars to be designed, engineered, and developed in the United States.
And that's a lost house.
Let's talk about this.
Small car development was never a priority here. That's the reason that the small cars that the big three traditionally sold did so poorly. Is it not better to have the engineers here concentrate on the stuff that the companies really value and have the engineers in Europe?
I think you got to do it all. I think you got to do it all as a car company. You think that Toyota will say, the Americans are better at bigger cars, so we're just going to let all that be done in the U.S. They're never going to
engineer small cars. They just do it in Europe where small cars are an important part of their business.
Right.
I think that makes sense.
But we have an administration now that's telling the car companies, the Detroit Three, we don't want you building trucks and SUVs anymore. We want you to build small cars, and we want you to develop all that technology. Sure.
I've heard you have to build more big cars. I haven't heard anybody, more small cars. I haven't heard anybody say that that we're going to take the pickups out of the Arkansas hog farmer's coal.
No, we're not going to take them. We're not going to get rid of them. But we're not going to build nearly as much. We're not going to design and engineer nearly as much. And guess what? It's not just compact cars that we've lost. All mid-size car development is not done in this country anymore. I mean, Ford's going to bring everything from Europe. GM, this is interesting. What if GM loses, really, control of Opel?
That's the
What happens to that product pipeline?
If GM loses Opel, GM immediately loses all chance.
But you've already seen GM going back and saying, we want 30% of this new union to ensure their pipeline.
Yep. Right, but, you know, transfer pricing is going to be very different. You know, if I'm GM Detroit and I tell Opel, here's what the transfer price is going to be, you're not going to dictate that to a Marchionne and Fiat. He's going to say, here's what your price is going to be. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, GM's costs accounting for what it thought it was going to do these vehicles for is out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. Opel is the scariest thing around GM for me. Because if they do lose control of it, you're right. That's where midsize, compact, subcompact car engineering is. That's the stuff that they've just begun to get a handle on with their products over here. If they lose that, and those are the growth segments of the market over here, if they lose that, they're done. They're toast.
In this sad time, when it comes out, there's going to be probably, the most aggressive time in the history of the auto industry in a while. The Chrysler and GM, let's assume they both come out of bankruptcy. That's when the claws come out from all competitors. It's not a pity thing anymore. If I'm Toyota, if I'm anybody else, I'm going to go after and try to kill these companies. It's going to be a really interesting time in this market. Probably 2011, 2013 is going to be a really interesting time when it's just a bloodbath of competition, which is great for the consumer.
Well, I think, you know, in that time frame, I'm saying from 2012 to 2015, the floodgates are going to burst open. The pent-up demand, they're not going to be able to contain it. Boom, it's going to go. And they are all going to be straining to meet demand, all of them. They're not going to have time to go and try to kill somebody because they're going to be too busy making more money than they ever have in their lives.
Just a couple of years, 2011, 2012, when these guys that are holding back a little bit because they don't want to look like they're just killers for these poor American companies. They're going to try to kill them once they're out of bankruptcy. But you're right. You're going to see these college students that can't get jobs, that finally get jobs, and people getting back into the job bank needing a car. 2013, 2015, it is a gold mine if you're standing.
But I still say we have to retain small car development, mid-size development, in this country, because all the technology that goes with that gets developed here.
I won't argue with you philosophically, but you can't use the word retain because it's already gone.
Well, it's gone, right?
If you want to make an argument, you got to bring it back, and you got to invest in bringing it back,
right?
And you have to find a way to do that and still make money
when
the volumes for those are not that big.
You got an email this week about why we were subsidizing small cars all these years. Didn't you send that to me?
Yeah.
Discussion point?
Yeah.
Yeah, a reader was asking.
How do we mean subsidize? And the point is that the big three made all their profits on trucks and SUVs.
Which allowed them.
100%. Yeah. Which allowed them to sell passenger cars at a loss.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Now we have an administration that is going to push them out of trucks and SUVs to any extent possible that it can. And they're no longer going to be able to afford to give cars away for free. So that tells me car prices are going up, and they're going to go up fast.
Not to mention that the concept of a premium small car is going to be, you know, something the American consumer's going to have to get used to. Those that aren't already into minis and, you know, that's going to be... How much is that Cobalt again, or whatever it is, the Cruise?
Right.
We saw it in 2006 when the first downsizing, people starting to buy these smaller cars and more mid-sized cars, but they were loading them up more. They didn't want to strip out anymore. They wanted the fuel economy, but they wanted the creature features. And so there's the opportunity just from that, and now that we've had a severe market swing, we'll be able to get prices maybe in 2012 or 2011 for a small car, which what you pay for in Europe.
Right. That's a key point, because if you look at a Ford Focus over here versus a Ford Focus in Europe, and I know, totally different platforms and totally different cars now, the European car is $5,000 more expensive, even though the American car comes base with a lot more equipment. I mean, a lot more equipment. And that's what we're going to see is, I think, an across-the-board $5,000 increase in car prices between now and 2015, not including inflation.
I agree.
Not including inflation.
Absolutely.
And when people say, oh, the Chevy Volt, $40,000, that's too expensive. I'm telling you, The average MSRP is going to be $40,000 in 5 years. The average. So I don't think the Volt's going to be overpriced by that time frame at all.
Yeah, I agree.
We are only 5 minutes away from rapid fire.
Rapid fire, coming right up. Oh, right.
Grabbing those.
get your comments and questions in.
You know, I'm driving a Focus SES Coupe 5-speed. Really nice.
Not a bad car.
Really nice. Like
they
it.
Got rid. I saw it parked next to you. They got rid of that little side vent.
Well, the SES Coupe is sort of like they're sporty. If you get an automatic in the car, it's different. The Coupe 5-speed SES has got alloy wheels. It's got a.
You mean the little gill?
The gill. He means
yeah.
the fender gill.
Yeah. It's still like got, a big giant zit on your nose.
Has
it's
that.
So ugly.
Well, the Ford design has referred to the Focus one as the cheese grater. Because if you look at it, it kind of looks like a cheese grater.
And it is cheesy.
No, it just made the car look horrible.
But, you know,
it's a nice shape.
As good as this car is, and I think it's really strong, I can only imagine the Fiesta, and when we get the real stuff over, it's going to be
Well, great. I've driven it. Mark, you've driven it, too, the European Fiesta. It's
really
knockout good.
Yeah.
As much as everybody raves about the Honda Fit, and it is a good car, the Fiesta is just a notch above the Fit, especially in the interior. Much nicer use of materials.
Absolutely.
Which stunned me. Now, that's the European version. Let's see what they end up putting in the showrooms
here.
That's
going to be one of the big questions. And there's a couple of places on the European one where I saw materials that I didn't think were quite up to it that they should fix for the United States
market. I think they will.
And Ford has said they would. I want to go back to the $5,000 price differential, though. The question for me is not, does a Focus become $5,000 more expensive? Is the next generation Focus or the Chevy Cruze or whatever it is good enough that you can price it like it was a Civic or a Corolla? Because if that's the case, that is basically a $5,000 your movement in price.
Yeah, because
and
the
you're
transaction
still talking about
price.
Cars that are affordable for most people. It's just that. I mean, it was always a folly for GM and Ford and Chrysler to build small cars that they knew they were going to lose money on, so they didn't really work all that hard at doing them well.
Right.
If they do them well and they can get 18, 19 grand, that's an appealing picture to me.
Right. No, I agree totally. And, the only reason they built the current crop of small cars is under CAFE laws. You have to do it. It's by law. And thank you, UAW, because the UAW made sure that got written into the legislation because they knew they would be out of building small cars.
So you had cars that you couldn't make money on just to get the CAFE, but in Europe, you could price for them. And do they have a CAFE in Europe?
No.
No. They have a gasoline tax. So the customer has an incentive to buy a small car.
Market.
Wouldn't that be lovely?
Hello.
Yeah. Right.
At least thank God the government is involved in the car industry anymore.
Well, like I say, I think we're going to see a big increase in car prices, and it's going to catch people by shock. And I'm not convinced at all the average American household is going to be able to keep up with this rapid increase in price that we're going to see in the next 5 years. And it's not just pricing small cars to make sure that you can make a profit on them because your SUVs are no longer subsidizing that. Look at the new technology that we're going to have to get into. Dual clutch transmission, direct fuel injection, the whole EcoBoost thing Ford's doing, whether it's hybridization, clean diesel, lightweight materials, all that's going to drive up the price of a car. And that's why I'm saying you ought to buy one now because the price is going up quick.
Can I ask a question?
You may.
The panel's version. Chrysler's basically shut down right now. GM's going to shut down. How many suppliers are going to go out of business? And do those two companies, when they come out of bankruptcy, have the suppliers they need? Do the suppliers also shut down Ford and maybe Nissan and Toyota in some respects?
That's a big concern over in Dearborn right now, I'll tell you that.
And at Toyota and Honda and Nissan.
And at Toyota, Honda, Nissan. I mean, this whole thing is hanging by a thread. And I don't even think the Obama task force understands, really, how it's hanging by a thread. They can be immersed in this stuff all they want, but they really don't understand. And frankly, the average American doesn't understand the tentacles of this business that go out all across the country in mom-and-pop suppliers that are 30 people in a small town in Ohio to the Johnson Controls to the mega, People
well, I think
don't.
Johnson Controls is going to make it, and I think BorgWarner is going to make it, and there's a few other tier one American suppliers that are going to make it. But I think you raise a really good point, Jason. We should be very worried, because I think the supply industry is on the verge of collapse.
So, and they got $5 billion of the $18 they asked for. It went through Chrysler and GM because they asked for government money. What do they really need? And as if we get 3 or 4 weeks from now, when some of them start falling, does the administration come in and say, okay, we've got money for you? You know, today we just heard the stress test of the banks.
Right.
Bank of America, Wells Fargo, there was a third one.
Citi.
They're going to get $75 billion more, those three banks. $75 billion, and GMAC. $75 billion more.
Well, the left field bleachers in Citi Field, where the Mets play, everyone, all the taxpayers can go there and watch the game for free. You didn't hear that? You know, it's not a bad deal.
Right.
I'll give you a corollary to your question, though. If the suppliers go out of business during the shutdown, can Chrysler and GM start back up when they want to?
I remember at Chrysler when Collins and Ankman got in trouble, and they did, I believe, a lot of the interior IP and so forth for the 300. And Chrysler propped up Collins and Ankman on not a weekly or monthly, a daily basis, because they knew to resource the IP of the 300 would take maybe a year and a half, and that was the hottest car on the planet, and this will put us out of business. So,
well, there are some people who really believe that they don't emerge from bankruptcy.
There's some people who believe this is part of the task force's plan to drive a bunch of them out.
That we
and
own.
Then they'll find out which operations really do need money, and they'll just go and buy those operations. They don't want to prop up entire companies. They just want to let, you know, the water level drop to expose the rocks that they really got to pay attention to.
Do you buy the theory that the government pulled the trigger on bankruptcy for Chrysler to show the GM bondholders we're serious? Don't test us.
Well, you know, Chrysler came within a whisker of getting through this without going into bankruptcy. And it was those hedge funds and some minor banks that went, we're going to hold out. We think we can get a better deal in bankruptcy. I think the administration would have loved to have avoided it. What I find the most interesting, it was the president of the United States who went out and announced it. It wasn't the Treasury Secretary, the Secretary of Commerce. It wasn't a task force member. It was the president that made that. Now, that's a high-level White House decision to go, Mr. President, you've got to make this announcement. Why? Why did they have him do it? Was it... And what I think is it could actually be good news, and we'll finish this thought and we'll get to that.
Seamus.
This is the president saying, I'm standing by this auto industry.
That's why an infomercial is just a step away.
Yep. Okay, we got to cut this off. We got to get to some of our comments that have come in. It's time for rapid fire. Okay, and then remember, you got to call what time frame that we want.
Okay, this is 1 minute.
1 minute. Put up the 1 minute, Carmen. And who's it from?
From Lars2885 on Twitter. What obligations does GM have to its Pontiac dealers?
A lot of hot air right now, and then when they go into bankruptcy, zero.
Well, they owe them a lot. Look, these are guys who believed in the brand. They invested in the brand. They put all this work into it. Now GM's kicking them out.
But you know, they don't owe them that much because there's only a handful of Pontiac solo dealers left.
Everybody else
is Buick and GMC.
Yeah,
there's
even the combined
and
guys are going to take a bath.
There's nothing
good. Yeah, but
good
as long as you promise them, you know, here's the stuff that you would have gotten for Pontiac, you'll get it as a Buick or a GMC anyway. They're not going to complain too much.
There's nothing good about the Pontiac thing. That just makes me stick.
Well, I pity the dealers. I think they're owed a lot, but they're going to get nothing.
Yeah.
Squat.
I know. It's bad. Okay, next.
What time?
Mike Western. Let's do it 1 minute. That makes us work faster. Mike Western asked,
Mike's a good guy. He asks good questions.
Okay. Why is John running this panel?
Oh, not that, Mike Western.
Could you guys please comment on the public relations campaign that General Motors needs to launch to win back the American public? Americans don't seem to care about what used to be the number one automaker. What can be done about influencing public opinion?
Peter already said it, the Obama infomercial.
Yeah, and I'm not kidding about it, because as each day goes by, it's going to come down to something like that.
You're the PR expert.
No, I want to hear. Oh,
okay, hear Mark.
My client.
I couldn't agree more. I think that they need to step outside of the box of how we market ourselves normally. They've got to talk to people who know political communications, and they probably need politicians. And if they could get the president, you know, on board with it, this is not the kind of communications they know how to do, and they got to face that.
Well, I don't think I really.
Clock's ticking.
Yeah, I don't think GM could do it. I mean, I don't think GM standing up and saying, "Hey, you really need to give us a second chance and a closer look." I don't think GM just doing it by themselves can do it. It's going to have to be the president.
Okay, that's
as
the ding. Ding.
I get one. I'd put all my money in the dealer bodies, working with the dealer bodies around the country for both companies to get the word out, because they're the local leaders in the community, and do it.
There's the PR expert.
Okay. Unemployed, by the way.
resumes online.
This is from Into the Touch on Twitter. Will you discuss this? Why not simply put the Volt powertrain in the Cruise? Why wait 2 years for a $40,000 car?
What kind of time?
1 minute. I like the 1 minute, because we got a bunch of questions.
Gotcha.
Because it wouldn't make as big a splash, first and foremost. I mean, the Volt is a technical exercise, but it's also a publicity exercise. It's got to look different. It's got to look exciting. If it's a $40,000 cruise, people will ignore it.
Plus, if GM gets to that point, we will start seeing that drive technology in other things.
In other vehicles. The other thing I'd point out is the Volt technology is designed for the Volt. The Volt is designed from the ground up for all these batteries and the generator engine and all that. The Cruise isn't designed for that. So you put that in the Cruise, it's not going to be nearly as satisfying a vehicle.
I'm getting sick of people beating up on the Volt. Let them get the Volt right. It's not going to save the company by itself. And then let them move on from there.
Yeah.
The Lexus hatch, this is from different from the comments sections asks. The Lexus hatchback, over and over mags and blogs say, but this cool one is Europe only. Why? Why is the Lexus hatchback Europe only?
Europeans buy hatchbacks and Americans don't. I mean, Europeans love hatchbacks. It is a better design in many ways. It's more space efficient. You can do really interesting things with the shapes. Americans look at, you know, hatchbacks and they think cheap. That's why nobody sells them here.
Especially with a luxury brand. I mean, it may come to this market somewhere down the line, but this market's not ready for a small hatchback Audi A3 size kind of a vehicle, even though Audi's got it.
I agree.
And when I've helped try to launch a hatchback over the last 5 years, we sat and talked with you, say, no, really, there is a market here. And there wasn't. Okay. Strata blog on Twitter asks, how long will it take for Chrysler and GM to maneuver through the wreckage and resurrect? 60 days, 90 days? Peter?
Say that again. That's my friend Tina Rossini up in Toronto.
Oh, and there's also a note where she's going to meet you later. How long will it take for Chrysler and GM to maneuver through the wreckage and be resurrected? 60, 90 days? Question.
Oh, plus 90 days, long, you know, a year, 18 months.
It sounds to me like she's asking specifically.
No, it's he, Tino.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
sorry, Tino. But that sounds like, because of the time frame, like it's a specific bankruptcy question. I think there's so much complication out there, they're going to do everything they can to keep GM from having to go into it. So I wouldn't bet too much that they will.
But still, you know,
it's going to be longer than the 30 days they're shooting for.
But he's also asking, you know, they're shutting down GM for the summer. I mean, how long is it going to take? It's going to take a while for these car companies to even feel like there's anything close to a momentum.
John?
Less than 60 days.
Okay, last question. Camaro from Super Scribbler. Is it too little too late?
Well, it was never the car that was going to save GM, but it is the kind of car that GM should build.
Give us one minute.
It's a part of a portfolio, and if you've got good small cars, good big cars, good sporty cars, you need all of it. The Camaro is an important part of a full line.
Yeah, and it's not a throwback. It's, you know, it's a very contemporary car, very contemporary architecture. And I look at this, it's one more good-looking vehicle out on the road instead, you know, and one less bad one on the road. So I'll take it.
Plus, GM just announced today it's adding a second shift that it's going to be running on overtime at the Oshawa plant because the demand for the Camaro is that great. But they also had their first recall today, too.
Was it
a battery cable?
On the positive side, it could rub
300
vehicles.
Yeah, V8 right. models only. An embarrassment.
But the standard Camaro package, that high horsepower V6, that's a sweet car.
It's good.
Comment from guest. Will EcoBoost be a winner in the marketplace? Ford's EcoBoost.
I absolutely think it will be.
Yeah, it will be. But, you know, Ford's managed to brand this EcoBoost.
Which is very smart.
Very smart. But, I mean, Volkswagen and Audi have been out for a couple of years with direct injection.
But you know what?
More than a million of them.
But they didn't brand it.
Only the enthusiast consumers know that.
That's right.
The average American, it got one of them EcoBoosts in it, you know.
It will be a success, but Ford would have gotten, they would have benefited a lot more if they had put the technology on a small displacement four-cylinder engine and blown the lid off the economy first.
I drove a 1.4 liter Focus EcoBoost.
That's the car that would have gotten them headlines.
Right.
You know, a V6 turbo, you know, Taurus show performance car. You and I are going to love to drive it, but it's not going to put them on the front page of the newspaper.
Right. You know, they developed the EcoBoost as a way of getting power and still having fuel economy. Now they got to do one that's just purely for fuel economy.
Ford can do nothing wrong in relative terms right now. They announced today they're going to build the new Focus at the plant, converted from the Navigator plant. They're going to build an electric vehicle there. They're relatively on all cylinders, and they ought to take advantage of this stuff. 1 minute on the next question. What about the cash for clunkers bill? Think it's a good idea?
There are a lot of drawbacks to it, but I think net, yeah, it's probably a good thing for a while, not like indefinitely, but for a while.
I'm morally opposed to these kinds of things, but we're in dire straits, and it's proven to work remarkably well in every other country where it's been used, Germany notably. One thing, though, that is interesting, in the UK, they just took a big nosedive in car sales because their cash for clunkers starts May 18th. So once the consumer hears it's coming, they're going to sit on their hands until it does.
And it's not just that. I know people in America who are postponing purchases because they're sure it's going to happen. So it's a gimmick, but it's a gimmick that works, and they really should pull the trigger on it fast.
Well, that should be part of the infomercial.
Yeah. Jason?
And that question was from Drewsome. This next one's from Start the Clock Again. Let's do this one 30 seconds. Artemis 77. Thank you, Artemis. Any small diesels by the big three coming in the next 5 years?
I doubt it.
Nine. The diesels, they come from the Germans.
But we say this as three people, I think I can say, who love small diesels.
Yeah.
The big three just aren't doing them.
But did you guys notice, I noticed this driving home last night, the price of diesel is almost cheaper than gasoline right now. I was blown away by that.
I love our market. we'll finish out this last 13 seconds. Drewsome, we're going to answer your question. What is a rally cap? I think we showed you visually, if you're watching.
You turn it inside out.
Yeah, do it again.
Yeah, do it again. Show it.
Turn it inside out.
Wait till the camera's on you.
You take your cap and
turn it inside out.
I don't have a very good cap. This is an Auto Week cap, and Dutch should...
You know, I'm going to bring in some Auto Extremist hats. That's enough of this.
Yeah, I'll wear yours if you give me what they're giving me to wear the hat.
and it's what people...
So you turn it inside out.
Turn it inside out.
And that's a sign that you're for your team.
When you're behind, you rally the troops, and you're going to win the ball game.
A losing baseball team, when they start to make a run, they do that, and they feel better about it.
Right.
Unless you're the Red Wings and you're playing in Anaheim and the official doesn't see the puck.
That's true. comment from Super Scribbler. John, what brand of lager is in your glass? 5 seconds.
Lager in my... Oh! Lager! Yeah. Sam Adams, of course.
Okay.
Boston Brewery.
And a tiger in your tank.
Yeah.
And we're going to... Well, let's end it on the last question here. Comment from Bill Bowen.
I'm trying to remember, what was the last Fiat sold in the U.S.?
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, it was the Strada.
But it was not called the Strada in the United States. Well, you're right. Very good, Mark. It was called the Ritmo.
That's right.
It was called the Ritmo.
I thought it was the 124 back in the 70s.
No, no, no.
The
Ritmo.
In
fact, I remember I was at the launch of the Ritmo, and Johnny Agnelli was there. And Luca di Montemazzola was there. And I remember Agnelli saying, if this car doesn't work in America, we are out of here. And I later came to realize that man knew what he was talking about.
I had a Strada 1980 Midnight Blue. It was a good car.
I called it the plastic wonder car because it was one of the first cars that really started to use plastic in the interior.
Yeah, and it had a design flair to it. It made the Golf back then looked like, or the Rabbit back then looked like, you know.
A box.
Yeah.
One of my roommates in college bought one the day before Fiat announced they were pulling out of the United States.
Timing's
out,
everything.
Pulling out early. Thank you to our viewers. I'm glad we had this work tonight. We used some of the questions from last week as well. Hope we kept it rapid fire and make people part of this show, and I think that's the way it's supposed to work.
I liked it.
Really great tonight, and we're at the time limit, dude.
Yeah, we are. We're at the top of the hour, so we got to wrap this up. We got to thank several folks here. You know, you can always follow us at Twitter. It's twitter.com/outofline, or you can follow Peter at twitter.com/autoextremist, or follow Mark Phelan at twitter.com/Mark_Phelan, and Phelan is Phelan. But Mark, great having you on the set, man. It was great having you here. And Peter and Jason, thank you guys too. And
do I get my 5-second blurb for my charity?
Dude.
ForgottenHarvest.org. ForgottenHarvest.org. Help hungry people. Every dollar you give, we feed 6 hungry people. Your money can go no better place. So, and if you're not local Detroit, you don't want to help local Detroiters out, you can go in your market. There are food banks in your market. In New York, it's City Harvest. But the economy's struggling, which means a lot of people are struggling. Search out a food bank, a pantry, and give a few dollars, and you'll feel great about yourself, and you'll help a lot of hungry people.
Yeah, and one other thing I got to mention, too. I'm going to be out of town next week for Autoline Daily. Mark's going to be filling in for me for a couple of days, so make sure you check in and watch him and let me know how he does. Anyway, thanks, you guys. Great show. Visit our website, outofline.detroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more at outofline.detroit.tv.